Welcome back to another episode of the Beer Healer Interview spin-off series, The Pro, The Protégé, and The Hack. As usual, I have the pro, Dave Patton from Akasha, and his protégé, Ben Miller, who brews under the name From Ben. Our topic for discussion this month is brewing equipment, and this one is dedicated to all of you out there that decided to get into brewing your own beer just to save a bit of cash. You fools. And with that, welcome aboard, Dave and Ben.
Yeah.
G'day, g'day.
Fellas, did either of you ever utter those fateful words, "I'm going to save cash by brewing my own beer"?
No, never, 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 ever, ever did I brew beer to save money.
No, that's fair enough. What about you, Dave?
No, I don't think I did either. It was, for me, it was always going to be a new hobby and something else to do. So, no, I don't think I ever did it to save money.
He was a millionaire back then anyway, so it didn't matter.
A millionaire?
Jeez. speaking of brewing beer, it's the moment of truth, Ben. I've got a can of Tino Pie, the New Zealand Hazy Pale Ale, in my hand. It's been wrapped in the paper towel, wet the paper towel, and put in the freezer. So it's because I only got home about an hour ago, and it is beautifully coloured.
It's so good, eh? Isn't it awesome?
I've never heard of that.
The best hack ever. Before. The best hack ever.
That is brilliant. I'm going to use that again. So it's cold. What's this going to be like? Is it going to be any good? You have to talk me through it all.
Well, look, I don't know. That one's had a rough life.
Here we go.
Is it looking okay?
How's it looking? You can hear it pouring into the glass.
Those poor cans, they would be the two most terribly treated cans in the whole of Australia, I think.
Talk me through this. What am I tasting? What am I smelling? What are the brewer's notes on this one?
What are the brewer's notes? Well, that's hard to comment on. So I managed to get Ruaka back into this version of Tinapai, which is really exciting because previously I wasn't able to get Ruaka on a commercial scale, so I had to use Kohatu, which is just still a great hop. It just doesn't have that real out there sort of citrusy tropical punch that I get from Ruaka. So, yeah.
And your mate managed to get them for you.
Yeah, old Puddin over here managed to get me them. So,
what a great bloke. What a great bloke.
He's a lifesaver, is he? Made that beer. You know? My beer would have been crap without him.
Well, I'm very pleased. I'm glad I got it. The wait was worth it. I told you it takes a long time for couriers to get beers to Tasmania. That's just how it is down here.
It wasn't that, though. It was the pickup issue because that other beer I sent you, that you still haven't drunk.
No, because I'm saving that for when I can share it. It's a 12% barrel-aged stout. Like, that'll knock me off.
And?
Yeah, but I'd like to share that with my dad the next time we're at the shack together.
Fair enough.
Oh, yeah, nice. Nice.
That's so pretty cool. Yeah. Well, I haven't opened my
can. I'm a sharing kind of guy.
But look, no, it's a New Zealand Hazy Pale Ale. It's a beer that I have brewed a lot of times. I'm very, very proud of it. It's the aroma is fantastic. I was saying to you before that I get a lot of papaya, but sort of later on I get a lot of like quite limey, zesty citrus come through. It's quite nice. It's good.
But very happy fucking with it. Enough about you and your beer.
Well, I haven't are you gonna give me a chance to open my can of beer yet or what? I haven't opened my beer.
Go on then.
You should be able to guess what this is just by the noise of how it opens.
Oh, it's a bent spoke, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon you're onto it. What is it?
Oh, is it the crankshaft?
It is, mate. It is.
Nice work.
Jeez,
nice
sounds
work.
Good.
Yeah.
I already opened mine halfway through a can. That took so long to get through that fucking introduction.
Oh, righto. So what do you got? What do you got?
I've got an old favourite of mine, Mosaic IPA by a brewery called Akasha.
Yeah, that's in my opinion, I think that might actually be your best beer. I do love that beer. It's a ripper.
There's a few thousand, 10,000 people out there that agree with you at the moment. It's going well.
Nice. All right, enough patting yourselves on the back, you boys. Let's get on to this thing. So we're talking about equipment tonight. Now, it's one of those things in brewing, like you can go as big or as little as you want with this stuff. You can just keep spending for friggin' ever unless you've got a wife that maybe manages your finances. So I think tonight we'll have a bit of a chat about the three levels of equipment because we've got three different sort of levels of experience here. So we're going to have, you got me at the bottom with my all-in-one system. We'll have Ben with what I'm calling his prosumer setup and then Dave as the pro. Let's start at the very bottom end, fellas. So I'm walking into Big W and the Cooper's all-in-one plastic tub kit is staring me in the face. I'm new to all of this. It looks nice. It's got nice writing and everything on it. Should I buy it or should I go elsewhere?
I would, for sure. That's how I started.
Fair enough. Yeah, me too.
That is literally exactly what I did, except I think it was a Coles I walked into. And I was looking at it going, you know what? I'm going to give that a go. It was it was terrible, but it got me into the, you know, into the obsession of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I don't think there's many. I haven't met many homebrewers that didn't start like that, so I certainly didn't do anybody any harm. I think it's a good way. Many people fuck it up, so it's kind of a good way just to get the real, real basics of what actual fermenting beer is, right? That you've got,
yeah.
You've got wort, you've got a fermenter to put it in, you've got some level of sanitation, hopefully, that they describe on the box. I can't remember.
You've got to
get it down to a certain temperature before you, you know, open up the little packet of yeast. So I think it kind of gives you the basics all the way through to bottling and everything else. So I don't think it's a problem. And it's pretty cheap, right? I assume they're still cheap. So it's really just a good way of getting into it, making beer that may or may not be drinkable, but good way to get started.
My first ever effort with that, when I was still working at Lion, part of the Bogues team, we had a home brew competition. We all got, there was like six of those kits. We all went off and made our beer, brought them back in, and then we put them through the lab after we'd finished them. And I think mine was infected with like E. coli or something stupid like that.
Nothing serious.
So that all got tipped.
How good. Yeah, my first couple of ones were like, I was like, I don't understand what I'm doing wrong. I remember looking up all these recipes and I was like, I'm going to get real creative here. I'm going to add some strawberry box honey or whatever it is. It was a strawberry blonde you could have made, but all of them just tasted like beer flavored fizzy water. They were terrible. They were overcarbed as hell. I didn't even know. I didn't understand how to read the hydrometer or all that stuff. But you know what? That was because they weren't what I wanted them to do. That's what drove me to go further into it. I went, all right, well, clearly I can get better than this. So let's go from there. And that's sort of where. But I did have a break of about 2 years, I think, where I did nothing. And then I all of a sudden just clicked and I just picked it up and went crazy with it.
And fucking look at you now, Tino Pie, baby.
Look at me. Calm down. We're not allowed to talk about my beers, man. Sit around.
So after you got rid of your plastic tub kits, what did you guys move on to after that?
Mine was a 11-litre stainless steel pot from Kmart that I still have today.
Know it and love it, Will.
Yeah, nice. And nice. I've still got it today. I use it from anything from winter soups through to big starters. If I need to make a big starter for the brews at Rusty Penny or something like that, I'll use that and bring it with me. And you know, it's really good. I used to do the wet packs. I started off with the wet packs from Country Brewer, and that was, I think I brewed one or two of those, and then just went, I'm just going to do it myself. So then just started with the liquid malts. I think back on the amount of hops I was putting into like 11 liters and it was just ridiculous. But the gravity on them were huge, obviously, because I was diluting back up in the fermenter, you know what I mean? But I did that for – I did like full partial mash, I suppose you call it, where you use your liquid malt extract along with your spec malt stew, do your boil on the stove. I did that for probably a year, I think, and then I built my own. Yeah, went up from there.
Yeah, nice. Hey, Dave.
Yes,
mate. Is it just me, or do you think that maybe Ben's making up for not saying much on the last episode because he's really jumping in, boots and all. He's not even giving you a chance.
I'm enjoying it. The trouble is that I've gotten a fair way through this beer listening to him carry on, and I might have to dump the earphones for a couple of minutes and run out to the fridge, which will give him a bit more time. So that's okay.
I was going to say, wouldn't it be like one of those phone calls where you just put the to your nan or something, where you just put the phone down, pick it up 5 minutes later, and she's still talking?
Your nan, I do that to you at the best of days. Mate, but I certainly had the did the stove top. I did not do it for very long at all. It was pretty frustrating, but I certainly did the partial. I think I did one sort of steep and partial mash, and did a couple of probably a handful of full extract boils, which was pretty cool with a really big pot, like a 20-liter pot. And, that's, again, it's sort of a good stepping stone to learn about actually adding in, you know, adding some grains, steeping some grains, adding some hops, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that sort of stuff is good to learn. But for me, I got a scientific background, so I was pretty keen to get into all grain pretty quickly after that.
I've got no scientific background, but I did watch about 5 episodes of BrewDogs on a plane over to New Zealand when I was still at Lion, went over for work, and on the way back I finished the final episode, I got bitten by the bug, and I did some research on how to make a 3-vessel system that was, you know, going to be gravity-fed and all this sort of shit, and when I left Lion, three old kegs that were sitting out the back in the shed came with me, drilled them out, false bottoms, gas burners, and I you know, had no idea, but straight into the old grain brewing.
Sure.
Jumped straight in. Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Right. And see, I always encourage people to like to start off on that sort of the basic level. Probably like even if someone comes to me and says, hey, I'd really like to start brewing, what do you recommend? I don't steer them towards the Cooper's kit. I steer them towards those wet pack kits or the ones that have where you're still doing a boil because it's still you're not cramming your head full of heaps of information where you're just going to go, ah, you know what I mean? But you still get to learn that the whole boil process, which is a pretty important side of it. And yeah. Then once you're used to that and familiar with it, then you can then go on to understanding mash temperatures, your grain profile, you know, all that sort of stuff. So that's straight into all grains a pretty big step.
Yep.
For sure. Because even I know after a couple of years of brewing, going into all grain even then was daunting for me, you know. It was like,
yeah. So. Yeah, I was a bit stupid really, but, you know, I struggled away with it. No, I know, I'm Tasmanian.
Yeah.
So I struggled away with that for a little while and then somehow I came across this thing called brewy. Now, look, I've copped a fair bit of crap for not being a proper brewer and being that I'm still making pretty average beers, maybe those people are right, but I found this thing called brewy, which turned out to be a little bit too automatic for my liking. So you basically had two tubs either side and in the middle you had hop containers and so you'd put it in, it was basically brewing a bag in one side and the other side was your hot liquor tank. It would then get the water to the correct temperature, put it over the grains, mix it through the other side, boil it and then circulate the wort through the hop tank. So it was good to understand how those processes worked, but I just probably didn't have enough control for my liking in the end, and I don't think I quite learned as much as I thought I would.
Is it an app or is it actually equipment?
No, it's equipment. It's like this big. It was like a big stainless steel thing. It's huge.
How do you spell
it? B R E W I E. So yeah, look, long story short.
What you're talking about. I just googled it. You're joking.
It's like a kitchen benchtop thing. It's like the competitor to the Pico Brew and those sorts of things. But
you run a fish chip shop out of it.
Yeah, it looks like a double deep fryer. Like yeah, basically. Fryer. Yeah. Yeah. I got
people with money buy that sort of stuff, mate.
Well, I don't know. I just wanted to be able to brew more because I didn't have enough time, and it seemed like a good idea at the time.
What did you do with it?
I've still got one.
Yeah.
And I sold one because I was doing a bit of a deal with them. I was making videos and stuff like that for them, so it was a bit of an ambassador thing.
Ah, here we go.
But then I got rid of that. I haven't got rid of that one. Just put that away, and now I'm brewing on the Braumeister, which is probably the next evolution for me. But it's still one of those all-in-one type systems, which you guys that are real brewers don't really seem to like that much, do you?
Well, no, I don't think there's anything wrong with all-in-one systems. I think it's just it's a space thing, right? Like you wouldn't go build. See, for me, because I've had a background of always having cars and all that sort of stuff, I've always had shed space. So for me it was, I've got the floor space, I'm going to build a three-vessel system, as simple as that. But if I didn't have that, then for sure I would have gone down the line of a single vessel. And I think to be honest with you, the end product, as long as you know what you're doing with either of them, the end product's no different. Like so long as you've got good controlled mash temperature across the whole mash tun, you know, you get a really good rolling boil on and you're cooling all right, you're okay, you know what I mean? So
yeah, well, that's what it's giving me. I do have to throw in an extra electrical heat probe to get the rolling ball really working well. And as you know, I've been speaking to you lately about getting a the wort cooler. What do we call those things again?
Counterflow chiller.
Yeah, so that arrived this week. So there we go. Here we're talking about equipment. Just I'm already shelling out cash again.
That's all right. So which system did you have? There's a lot of single vessel systems around at the moment. Which one did you have?
I've got the 20-liter Braumeister with the cooling jacket.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, the Brau. It's a beautiful machine, absolutely beautiful. And I brewed on it the other weekend with my first hazy, which is now second stage of dry hopping.
I was going to ask you how that's going.
It's going well. It's got the second dry hop, which is the Idaho 7 and Mosaic in it.
How did your mid ferment dry hop go? Did you watch the airlock go mental?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. No. It was all good. It's I'm pretty happy with it so far. But again, I'm learning. I don't know all this stuff, and so every time I think I know something about brewing, I fucking don't. That's the only reason why I started this podcast with you guys. Yeah.
I think I feel like that at least once a day. So you're not alone.
So hey, Dave, when you first started the Kasha, did you have a pilot kit in there before you got the big one going on?
No. We took a little while to get. We do have one now, and I think it's a really important part of what we've done. And at Riverside, we built one first. It's a long time ago now, but we built pretty much almost a professional kind of three vessel system, or two, technically a two vessel system with a hot liquor tank. That was really useful in recipe development. We were about a year and a half in here at Akasha before we actually had a very, very nice system, pilot system built here, a 300 liter pilot system. But the real key for us is to build something that would, was pretty close to the same type of brewing methods that we use in the big brewery. So if we're doing a pilot on there, we're pretty comfy that it'll scale up pretty in a similar kind of way into the big system.
Yeah, nice.
Your poor forgotten about grandfather, Dave. You didn't even mention it.
Well, I never really used it, so it was a bit of a furphy. But so as you know, this is my second brewery, and in between I had a few months off, and I did buy a grandfather with the intention of going back to my roots during the holidays. But by the time we'd started brewing here at Akasha, it was still in its box. So, yeah. Yes, I bought one. You know, use it. I think we've used it a couple of times in here. The guys use it every now. Some of the guys, it's been a little bit of a handy thing for some of our new guys who are new to brewing as well. We try and send them home with it and have a bit of a go as well. It's a good little system.
I brewed on this one at the malt shovel one time with Freshy. It was an absolute ripper. It was a 50 litre system, I think, from memory, but it was on a pallet. So the whole thing was on this pallet, and you could just move around with a forklift to the position you wanted it. It was bloody fantastic.
Yeah, that's exactly. Our 300 litre system was designed to be forked up onto the pallet racking when we're finished with it. It's a good idea.
Yeah. Awesome stuff. All right, Ben, it's time to talk about your kit, mate, because it's probably a similar size to the ones that we're talking about with the pilot system, is it not?
It's, it's 20 gallons, so we get about, I think it's the maximum.
Yeah, we're talking metric here, mate.
Geez, it's all American stuff. So it's about 80. The most I can get pre-boil is about 85 litres, but that's pushing it. So, look, you know, if I was going to brew to maximum, I could probably get about 70 litres out of it realistically in the fermenter ready to go. But that was my systems have – I've had three systems before this one. After the Kmart pot, I did my first one with the old borrowed kegs, as you were saying.
Borrowed?
Three vessel Herms system, built it the whole thing myself. Did the Herms coil all myself and all that sort of stuff with some copper piping. And then not long after that, I sort of discovered I couldn't quite get a double batch out of it with bigger gravity beers. So I found a couple of, I think they were 88 liter stainless steel, just cheap Chinese stainless steel pots on eBay, and I upgraded my mash tun and my boil kettle, and then I had that for about a year. And then one of my friends, Brett, he was like, why don't we go halves on some SS gear? So yeah, went up there, and so from that we bought the 20 gallon infusion mash tun from SS Brewtech, and the 20 gallon BME kettle. So they're the 80-90 liter ones. Originally, I had converted one of those 88 liter stainless pots that I had back into my hot liquor tank, and then shortly after we did, I got a good deal on a 110 liter or 115 liter, just the basic kettles from SS. So I converted that back into a Herms hot liquor tank as well. Although I don't really ever use the Herms function of it at all anymore. It's still used every brew, but I don't really need it. So it's but that's what we run off in the. It's an electric kettle, electric hot liquor tank with a gas burner under it, just in case I'm late one day and I want to crank my water up. I usually just put it on overnight because it just runs one of those little 2200 watt Keg King elements, which over 115 liters does take a while to heat up. And the kettle is gas-fired with one of those big banjo burners, which does the job perfectly. So, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Mate, it sounds like a bit of a Frankenstein's monster, your kit. You've got bits of shit coming from everywhere, have you?
Well, I used to. I don't anymore. Now it's all SS BrewTech everywhere. The only thing that doesn't quite suit... Plug. Sorry?
Nice plug.
Oh, I've got to. I've got it. My old carriage is full of it. But it's look, I haven't bought all that myself. You know, Brett buys a lot of it too. It's my friend. We brew on it together. So,
yep.
But it's really, really nice gear. But the only thing that would be nice that from the next upgrade now is a stainless steel brew stand, because currently I'm still using my old tool bench from Bunnings, the old bracket shelving that I modified. I welded up. I made some brackets for the burners and the pots to sit on, like all the kettle stuff to sit on with the burners mounted into it and stuff. But it'd be I've got a control panel being built at the moment by my neighbour. So
oh, nice.
He's Sparky, we with a little bit of a brewing passion, so he said he'll help me out. Cool. So yeah, it's cool.
So let's pretend that your wife to be is not listening. What do you reckon you've spent on creating that whole kit?
Look, all up, I would say there's probably 20 grand sitting in the garage.
Ooh, baby, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. 20 grand. What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I like it.
I guess I spend a bit more on my hobby, haven't I?
Honestly, I have to be really honest with you. I can't stop Brett buying stuff. He's just like, that'd be nice. I'll buy that. And I'm like, got to find room to put it. But yeah, no. I'm like,
All right, Dave, in this dick swinging contest, you're up next.
he's only got a commercial brewery.
what size is the kit at the brewery?
Let me, if you wouldn't mind just humouring me for a minute, I'll let you know about my first all-grain system that I built, which I absolutely adored and brewed on for quite a couple, quite a few years, which was a urn as my hot liquor tank, which worked really well.
A hot coffee urn sort of thing.
Yeah, a big urn.
Yeah, okay.
We use that all the time.
It's about a 25. Ben, it's my turn.
Yeah, I don't like the tone in your voice, mate. Just calm down.
So I think it was 25, maybe 30-litre urn with little because the urns have they also have the little sight glass as well. You put your little graduation on it. That was brilliant. Put a little ball valve on it, and that was a hot liquor tank. So and boiled pretty quickly as well. So it was enough actually it was bigger because we were boiling in a keg, so it definitely 30 litres, and then we'd refill for the sparge. So worked really well. We had the Gatorade Esky.
Remember the classic old
Gatorade Esky,
orange and white,
which was perfect. Which was perfect for a mash tun, and I hunted around for that. I'd wanted a Gatorade Esky, and I eventually found one a second hand one on eBay for $20. Got that, and then built a. It was a PVC, not really a false bottom, but PVC pipe, sort of all around the bottom of the esky with little holes in it. So a little bit like a false bottom, but works really, really well. And then off on literally old school gravity fed system. I had the table and a milk crate with the urn on that, and then below the milk crate was a mash tun, and then on the floor was the converted legally acquired keg, which is really important, really important.
Yeah. Can I interrupt for 1 second? I had a similar gravity feed with my first system, but you know what I used? Do you remember Tap King from Lyon?
Oh, yeah.
I've still got one of those.
Systems. They had the shelving systems in all these bottle shops that no one wanted, so I used old Tap King shelving systems because they were like stepped up. They were brilliant.
There would have been a lot of them. Nobody wanted them.
Exactly, yeah.
Lionel Richie singing to you every brew you did as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good. I smashed those. I used to drink so much of that stuff.
So did I, because I got it for free.
Yeah, it was like the 150 lashes, mate. I used to empty my local bottle shop out of them all the time.
Nice. I've told this a couple of times in this story, but that's the beer I helped create, 150 Lashes. That's what I brewed on that 50-litre system with Freshie for the first time.
Well, you didn't do that.
That's my one claim to fame.
Should we thank you? I'm not quite sure.
I'm not sure.
I was going to be a dick then and be like, come on, man, you could have done a better job. But I drank 150 lashes and I'll still drink it today if it's, yeah. if it's anything on a pub. So,
good for its time.
Good stuff, mate. You can have that.
Yeah. All right, Dave. So anyway, let's get back to your kit. We're getting off on tangents tonight. No,
that's all good. So, yeah, into the keg, top pulled out, top cut out, I should say, with which fit a nice little pod lid nicely. And ball valve on the end of that, little pickup tube to the side of the inside of the keg so that you could whirlpool it nicely. And a big ass burner, not too dissimilar to Ben's. So, look, that was – and it was cool, man. It took quite a long time to build because I'm doing a lot of study as to how to actually – you know, not only how do you brew, what equipment do you need. There's a great book that I still recommend to this day to anybody who's thinking about all-grain brewing called How to Brew by John Palmer. And it is the book to go to, not only to learn how to brew, why you're doing everything, and also lots of good tips on equipment as well, without having to spend a lot of money. Because that thing would have cost a couple hundred bucks, and it was a very, very good system, brews a very, very good beer. So
proud of it. You're making me feel a bit nostalgic with all that, like with all the whole building, because mine was the same. It took so long to build it, and it was like every step of the way was so exciting. Every time you got something new for it, you just couldn't wait to add it to it, and you know what I mean? And then it was on to the next, and man, bringing back good memories, very fond memories.
You sound like you're about to cry, mate.
It's like that. Oh, you're getting all excited for brew day, and you get up at stupid o'clock and have your water ready to go and mash in, and now I just come home from work and smash a brew out in 3 hours and go to bed.
Fair enough. And from there, mate, you then eventually created the first brewery and then now the second brewery. So what about the current kit you're working on now?
The current kit is we're still running on a pretty small – we started with a 10-barrel system, 12 hec. To 1,200 litres, that should get everyone happy, which is a pretty small system, but it's a pretty high throughput system too. So the system we just spoke about is essentially a two-vessel system with a hot liquor tank. So when they talk about 2-, 3-, 4-vessel system, that doesn't include the hot liquor. So we were talking about two-vessel systems there. Mine is a 4-vessel system. So you've got a relatively traditional mash, but that mash is a mash mixer. It's just there to big propeller down the bottom just to get everything mixed together, all the water and the grain and so forth and the salts. We then transfer to a dedicated lauter tun, which is then transferred to the kettle. We've got a gas-fired kettle, just a big version of the homebrew one, really.
Yeah.
And then a separated whirlpool. So that allows us, having all those vessels separated, really the big thing about that is speed. You've now got 5- and 6-vessel systems as well. What it means is that you don't have to wait until the end to start another brew. So we'll quite often do 4 of those in one day.
I get it. Yeah.
So once you're sort of pushing over to the kettle, you can start thinking about mashing in the next one. And, you know, in a typical, we've got 2 shifts going here, in a typical 12-hour brew day, we'll be doing close to 5,000 litres. So not the most efficient now. We certainly weren't doing those sort of volumes back then. Now we've got to really start thinking about upgrading to a bigger system so that, you know, if we're doing 4 brews in a day, then, yeah, maybe that should be 10,000 litres or 20,000 litres. But
yeah, right, yeah.
One day.
Yeah. So can I ask you, when you jump from, say, Ben's kit to the pro-level kit, do you have to relearn everything, or is there stuff that translates? How does it work?
It's not too dissimilar, and in fact, I've done a couple of little. As I said, we got a 3,000 liter pilot. That's only a 3,000. That'd be a big pilot,
mate.
300 liter pilot. Even though that's a 2-vessel system, we've tried to design it closely relating, you know, in terms of the process, the timings, all that kind of stuff, pretty close to what we're doing the big one. So, and I've done a couple of things that I thought, oh, it's a bit risky. I might just do a little one and brew it out of Ben's system. And the jump from, say, 100 litres to 300 to 1,200 and then up from there, it shouldn't be too different. We find, you know, as long as you're keeping an eye on efficiencies and all sorts of things like that, grain doesn't change too much. As long as you're using, you know, you've got a good method of fly sparging essentially on your pilot kit or your homebrew kit. So the big difference there, I find that the difference between fly sparging and batch sparging, we won't have time to go into that today, but really does make a big difference. So I've always tried to be a fly sparger from day one as a home brewer. Yep. And obviously we all do it as a pro brewer. So it's important to keep those processes the same as the big guys, so there's not a big jump. So I find grain not too much of a problem scaling up. I think hops are probably a bit harder, particularly bitterness. We find that we get a bit more utilization out of the hops as we scale up. So we tend to not literally be too linear with that. And depending on what hops and where they're used in the process, that can change. But hops is where probably the hardest bit to scale up.
What do you reckon, Ben?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think we covered on that on one of the last podcasts, that so long as you sort of were aware of the differences in the systems themselves and tried to keep your brewing processes the same, then the jump was actually quite easy. It's sort of, it's just a matter of understanding where it can go wrong. You know what I mean? Like Dave said, like with your sparging and all that and hop utilization, they're the biggest things really. But like I say, with my scaling, I haven't to this date really had too much of a shock as far as, you know, I've never done a beer that's gone on a bigger scale and gone, oh, crap, it's nothing like the one I brewed at home. Just purely because you've just, as long as you know how your system at home is, the person whose brewery you're brewing at knows how their system is, and then you can both talk together about what you want out of it and you'll have no problems at all.
And there's some rules of thumb, you know, there's some multiples you can use to get pretty close, and then you've just got to really put one through, and then you say, well, you know, for the next pro brew, we might just tweak that a little bit here and a little bit there, but pretty close. It's not as hard as the people make out. But it can be. Sometimes you'll put a brew through and you go, that, you know, that's just way too bitter, or you know, we just didn't get the flavor out of that particular hop. It didn't scale well, so you've got to change it a little bit. But as I said, we got some rules of thumbs for most of the hops that we use, and we get it pretty close.
Fair enough. Now, look, I guess we've spoken a lot about stainless steel or the heart of the brewery so far, but that really doesn't scratch the surface of it all, I don't think. You know, how about we focus on some other bits of equipment for a sec, and I'll throw a few questions at you blokes. So, outside of the brew kit, what is the most important piece of equipment in the brew house?
Ooh. It's funny, you know, when people ask the question around equipment, we often focus on the hot side, which we've just done for about the last 35, 40 minutes. But I think for me, and I think I may have mentioned this on another podcast as well, is that it's probably cold side that's more important than the hot side, particularly when you're starting out to brew. So certainly temperature control is something that I always rabbit on about to home brewers around, you know, if they're asking for tips on what to do and where to spend some money. I think temperature control, you know, obviously a decent fermenter. I don't really like plastic, so I was a big glass fermenter when I was a home brewer. Did a lot of fermenting in glass.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, it's clean. It's not, you know, it doesn't soak things up like plastic does. So similar to stainless steel. So I think, you know, having a decent fermenter, but temperature control really, really, really is so important. You know, we can go into ingredients and talk about yeast selection and yeast counts and that kind of stuff, but if we're focusing on equipment, the control of temperature around that ferment is so damn important. And it's pretty easy, right? If you can find an old fridge and a STC 1000 controller off eBay for $20, you can control that fridge pretty easy. So it's not hard. You just got to put a bit of effort in, and again, a little bit of space as well.
Yeah, that's always something I've been a big advocate for. Is before you do anything on the hot, you can make a beer in an 11-liter. You know what I mean? You can go back to total basics and brew the most basic beer in the world, whether it's a kit beer, a canned beer, or a partial mash, or brew in a bag, or full three vessel system, whatever you want. But if you've got no temp control, that beer is going to turn out shit. Unless you're using Kvike yeast or something like that, obviously. But we, you know, that's only a very new development for us in Australia. But yeah, for sure, that temp control thing is a big one. Also, I think being able to get the wort out of the whirlpool quickly, I think that's a big one, because, you know, in a commercial brewery, you do your whirlpool, and then you put it through a chiller and straight into the fermenter. So you don't cool that entire kettle down at once on that hop cone, which, you know what I mean? I guess you can imagine if you're sitting there for 40 minutes trying to cool that down, your bitterness is going to be a lot higher than pushing that whole kettle out into the fermenter into 10 minutes. So that's why, like we were talking the other day about the counterflow chillers, the first one I built was made out of a half-inch copper coil, a 9 meter half inch copper coil with 3/4 inch like a PVC vinyl line, sorry, yeah, like a vinyl line on the outside of it.
Yep.
And that was good, but I had to run the wort through very slowly. So there was plenty of water flow there, but just the surface contact of the bed of the water wasn't enough. The other good way of telling that was the water coming out of it wasn't that hot. So, so I went back and built an 18 meter one, and that's the water coming out of it is boiling. You can't touch it, which means that all of that heat has obviously come out of that. You know, it's the wort now is now cold. So, and in the middle of winter, I'll have to slow the water right down. Otherwise, it'll go in it. Whatever the ground temperature of the water is what I'll go into a fermenter at. And I can run both my pumps through that flat stick. So that was a big improvement too, because I was then able to dial those IBUs in a little bit more and understand, you know what I mean? I didn't have that slow cooling process over time where you'd either have to back off on your whirlpool hops and then in turn you'd lose a bit of flavor. So now I can still, you know, punch a whole bunch of whirlpool hops in and then just get it out of the kettle once the whirlpool settled. So it's a big thing as well. I found anyway, as far as your beer qualities, obviously, like your yeast health and all that sort of stuff doesn't change if you've got that doesn't change that side of it. But as far as, again, scaling.
And what about, is there a piece of equipment that you think is overrated?
Overrated equipment. I don't know. I think I haven't ever really
that
come
that thing. You. I just had a look at that brewery thing. That's fucking overrated, mate. What is that thing? I've been looking because Ben didn't breathe for about 3 minutes. Then I was looking up this brewery thing, and that's quite intense. I've never heard of it before. That's overrated.
It even sous vides beef.
I think it's much better. Awesome. Beef flavored. Oh, wow.
Beautiful. Yeah, just cooked me dinner in this last night. Now I'm brewing a beer and how good's that, love?
on that chilling thing, I've got a couple of questions because I haven't had beer for a little while. I remember sort of 10, 15 years ago, there was quite a trend for no chill. Is that something that still exists where people put their whole wort into cubes?
I've never done it, so I can't. I tried it once
and it fucked up.
I know plenty of people who do it very successfully, but to me, it just doesn't sit well with me. But I think it's that thing that you account for the bitterness that you're going to get from it sitting in that cube hot for, you know, overnight. But then that means that you can't have those massive late kettle additions in there, can you?
No, so
there's
no such thing as a whirlpool hot, right? I mean, it just doesn't work that way.
Okay, yeah, if you're doing that, then you're very limited with the, it's like I say, I haven't done it, so it's kind of one of those things where I know a lot of people who do it and they haven't had problems with it, but I for the beers that I brew, it definitely wouldn't work. Like really large late hop addition stuff like that. It's just why I've never gone down that path. But now with the water restrictions we've got now as well, you know, those chillers, those counterflow chillers, fuck, they'd probably double my water usage, I reckon. So what I do now is I run my rainwater. So I run it from my rainwater tank through the counterflow chiller and then back into the rainwater tank again. And it doesn't quite come out as cold. But what I can then do is, because my fermenters are on glycol, I'm lucky with that, that they'll cool it down to pitching temperature within a couple of minutes. So I've got that advantage. But even still,
that is a big issue, isn't it? I remember running my immersion chiller.
Yep.
And I was counting, like I was putting the water into like big garbage bins to save the water. And I think after like 350 or 60 litre garbage bins, it was still going. I was thinking, shit, this is going to cost me a fortune to chill beer down.
Use a lot of water. You did that. That's the downside. And you know what? Unfortunately, that is the side of brewing that's just the way it is. It does use a lot of water. You do waste a lot of water of brewing, but I guess there are things you can do to try and minimize that. And that's why that counterflow chiller, just recently especially, I've really thought about it and gone, shit, hang on, you know, I'm actually using a hell of a lot of water here. So, and then I went, well, wait, I've got that rainwater tank out the back. Sure, it sits out in the sun all day and it's probably going to be 30 degree water, but at least if, for me, at least I'm lucky. I can cool that down really quickly. But you know what? Even if you're at home in a normal plastic fermenter and you had a fermentation fridge, in the middle of summer with my old chiller before I had the glycol and I was fermenting in summer, I would go into the fermenter at about 35 degrees, but I would have that fridge set at like 0 degrees for a couple of hours before I put the fermenter in there. So it goes into a really cold environment, and that way you're still able to cool that beer down to, you know, pitching temp within the hour or two. Yeah, that's okay. So that's, you know, there's other ways around that too. But
so my last question for you guys tonight: what is the best hack job you've ever seen on a piece of equipment to either improve it or fix it?
I reckon you'd almost say that, and it sort of gets back to that overrated thing. I don't think you need. You certainly don't need complex equipment like a brewery or even like a brewer or like anything like that to brew good beer. You can brew very, very good beer with, you know, hacking together the entire lot, right? Get an old urn off eBay, an old Esky, chuck some piping down the bottom of it, an old keg, cut the top out of it, a burner for $30, and you're making pretty good beer. So they're all hacks if you ask me. I mean, they're not professional equipment. Definitely
much. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
You know,
I actually did have written down on my list here the Gatorade chiller as one of the hacks.
I loved it. I loved that thing. I really wanted a round Esky.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of makes sense for a mash tun. So, yeah, these are all hacks. And I think even though they're hacks, they're making pretty decent beer. So I think there's pretty much a hack for every brewing process. Doesn't mean it's shit. It just means that, you know, you can you know, you can save a bit of money. It might take a little bit of effort to hunt down a few bits and pieces. But I remember about 10, 15 years ago, I saw someone hack together a kegging system out of a garden sprayer from Bunnings. It was nice. A thing. I saw a lot of it.
Those pressure sprays that you spray the weeds with.
Yeah. So you'd pump. You'd put the beer. It was done with. So you wouldn't pump it as such, but you'd have the big thing. You'd put your beer in it. And then you'd hack a little valve on, you know, into the side of it with a little O-ring on it, so it held tight with a bike valve. And you get one of the, you remember you can get the, or you probably still can get them, the little gas valves that pump up your tires. So it's a little tiny pump that uses one of those CO2 bulbs. And he literally put that on the valve, so you can pump this thing up with pressure, and then fashion a plastic line out of the top of it where you would normally have the little wand, and then one of those little plastic picnic taps pouring the beer. And apparently this thing works fine. I mean, that was too far for me, but that was probably the biggest and fucking funniest hack I saw in ages. But heaps of people did it. It was on that Aussie Home Brewer. I think it's still around, but it certainly was big time, sort of, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and there were heaps of people taking them to parties. Best hack ever.
I had something similar to that, except I used it for cleaning my beer lines in my fridge. Yeah, so right. It was exactly the same as that, but what I did was I took the nozzle off the end of the pump-up spray thing, and I had like the most ridiculous amount of reducers to get to the right thread size for a post, for like a liquid post. But it was awesome. It for years. Do you know what? I'd still be using it today, but I dropped it and it snapped the end of the nozzle off it. So now I just put cleaner and sanitizer in a keg, which is, in hindsight, much easier to do, but back then I only had two kegs and they were already full of beer. So, hacks are awesome. That's what homebrewing's about, man. That's what homebrewing's about.
Absolutely.
You just do what you can do to get shit done, and if that works, then that's awesome.
When I first bought my mini kegs, I didn't have a CO2 cylinder, but I was working on a project at the emergency services at the time, and a bloke got me a couple of old fire extinguishers. Worked a friggin' treat.
Yeah.
Love it.
How good's that?
Absolutely brilliant. Well, gents, it has been a fun chat tonight. It's been a bit difficult. We've had a few technical issues. I seem to be saying that a lot lately, but we got there in the end, and it was a great chat about equipment. We could have gone in so many different directions, but you know, Ben, you've got to get to bed, mate, because you got to get up early in the morning and stuff like that. So.
You know what? I'm not. We've got this rain come back to Sydney now, so we're going to get all the flooding again. I've got a 7 o'clock at the yard start, mate, which means that there'll be barbecue from Ben. all the boys will get a nice feed with some oozy, some beautifully cooked eggs, and we'll all go home.
Or you could come down to Akasha, and we're brewing our resilience beer tomorrow, which is exciting.
Are you really?
That's what I'm doing. Don't worry. That's where we are. Yeah.
We are. We're really excited. So a whole bunch of people coming down the brewery. So, if you're rained out, mate, you know where to come down.
Well, that's the conversation Dave and I have had, was because tomorrow is my last day of work before I go. Well, I'm getting married next week. So,
yes.
Yep. And I'm part of this resilience beer. But the problem is I was like, shit, I can't have any more time off work to get down there to help brew it. But because of this rain day now, as soon as I'll probably leave the yard at about 10 o'clock, so long as no work comes in, and I'll be straight down to the brewery, and we'll be knocking out a badass resilience beer. So
I might have a few cheeky American beers for us to try as well, brother.
Next Tuesday too, mate. Settle down. So my next hazy is going into tank at Akasha next Tuesday.
Beautiful. What is the resilience beer? What style is it?
It is a easy drinker, so XPA style beer. Yep. So there's a couple hundred breweries around the world brewing it over the next week. And
it's the one recipe, is it?
Yeah, it's one recipe developed by a bunch of brewers here in Oz. That's been rolled out to, as I said, 200 breweries around the world, and all proceeds obviously going to a few different fire related charities, which is bloody exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Pretty cool.
Nice work.
Pretty cool. I'm all for anything to help out the fireys, man.
Nice work. Nice work. Well, we better wrap that up there, guys, because I need to take a leak. So what better way to end this show tonight but me ducking up to take
– You're all class. You're all class.
Thanks for joining me again tonight, boys.
See you later, guys. Fun.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?